has Putin achieved its security goals in Ukraine and beyond Ukraine in Europe? How do you see the conflict right now?
Well, let's put it this way. The goals and objective of the West in engaging in this conflict in Ukraine, and remember, this is a war that the West chose to do, not Russia. It was forced upon Russia. The goal of this entire endeavor since 2014, one could say since 2008, with the expansion of NATO to include Ukraine, was to undermine the rule of Russian President Vladimir Putin and to eventually remove him from power. They have failed. Vladimir Putin today is a wartime leader who enjoys nearly 80% approval rating. He just announced that he'll be running for re-election in March. Nobody will beat him. He's invincible as a leader. The Russian people believe in him. They trust him. They want him. And so, you know, the idea of a weakened Vladimir Putin somehow looking for the West to throw him a bone in terms of bringing an end to this conflict is absurd. Russia has won this war. I mean, there's still some fighting left to do. I always point out to people that the Allies went across the beach at Normandy in June of 1944 and then drove through, captured Paris, and we got to the border with Germany. We knew what the future held. Germany was strategically defeated. They had one last gasp with the Battle of the Bulge, the Ardennes offensive. That failed, and that failure ate up all of Germany's reserves. They had nothing left. And we knew that in January of 1945. We crossed the Rhine River. We drove into the Ruhr Valley. We were entering into Germany. It was all over. By April 1st, there was no debate how this war was going to end. The bloodiest month for the United States against Nazi Germany in World War II was April 1945. It was bloodier than D-Day. It was bloodier than the Battle of the Bulge. The last month of Nazi Germany's existence was the bloodiest month for American forces because the Germans were fighting for their survival, for their, you know, the Nazis were, it was literally a death struggle. Russia has won this war. There's no way that this can be made otherwise. There's nothing the collective West can do in terms of providing Ukraine with money or materiel that can change this outcome. Russia has won. That doesn't mean that the fighting's over. There's still plenty of fighting left. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be easier for Russia going forward. The last month of this war could be the bloodiest month for Russia. We don't know. But the point is, Ukraine cannot win. They cannot win. It's over for Ukraine. And Russia knows this. And more importantly, I think Ukraine knows this and the West knows it. Right now, the West is in the position not of trying to viably help Ukraine, but to posture so that it's seen that they're trying to do everything they can for Ukraine while letting Ukraine die. That we're in a phase of this, the political phase of this conflict, where the United States and NATO and Europe are trying to shift blame for the failure of their Russian policy onto the shoulders of Ukraine. And this just, again, proves a point I've always made, that the West has never cared about Ukraine, ever, not once. We never wanted them to win. We never expected them to win. All we wanted them to do is do harm to Russia, significant military harm to Russia, which when you added that to the economic collapse of Russia because of Western sanctions, could lead to a Moscow Maidan moment where Russians threw Vladimir Putin out of power. That's always been the objective. It was never about a Ukrainian victory, ever. We don't care about Ukraine. What part of 500,000 dead doesn't anybody understand? What part of 10 to 20 million displaced? $1 trillion in infrastructure. What part of that implies that we care about Ukraine? Because no friend would ever allow that to happen to their friend. Ukraine is not our friend. Ukraine is a tool that we have been using to bring harm to Russia. That tool has been worn out. It's become ineffective, and it's now time for us to dispose of this tool. We are disposing of Ukraine. That's what we're in the process of doing. It's disgusting. Look, I've never taken Ukraine's side in this conflict, and I never will. But I just have to say, as an American, it's embarrassing as hell to watch what my government is doing. I mean, I've never been supportive of their policy, but my God, as an American, when your government says they're going to do something, you'd like to believe that the government has the gravitas to complete what it set out to do. But it appears that America stands for nothing, especially when we talk about, you know, with Ukraine, we'll be with you till the end. Well, apparently we will, but we're digging the grave and we're going to bury the body. That's not friendship. And I hope the Ukrainian people are finally realizing this and recognizing the need to bring an end to this war, because we're not going to save them. The cavalry will not come riding over the hill. Ukraine is going down. There is nobody to rescue them. There is nobody to save them except the Russians. And it's time they turn their fate and their future over to Russia by bringing it into this conflict on terms acceptable to Russia. And if one takes a look at the terms that Russia was putting forward back in 2022, they were extraordinarily fair. And I would imagine that Russia will have fair terms now too. I mean, they're not going to give up the territories that they've absorbed. That won't happen. But if Ukraine acts promptly to bring it into this conflict, Ukraine may not lose other territories. I don't know if it's too late for Odessa. When you turn Odessa into a platform to attack Crimea, to threaten the Black Sea Fleet, as Ukraine has done, I think Russia is well within its rights to say that Odessa and the Black Sea coast can never again be trusted to a sovereign Ukraine, that Russia's national security dictates that it controls that coastline, that city. Again, only Russia gets to make that decision, but I think that Russia may have decided that one of the terms for ending this war is that Ukraine loses sovereignty over Odessa and the Black Sea, and that this may become part of Novaya Russia. But again, only Russia can make that case. But, you know, whether or not they lose Kharkov, whether or not they lose Dnepropetrovsk, you know, there might be a chance for Ukraine to retain, you know, territory. But they have to stop this war now. And I don't know if they're ready to do that yet.
One of the areas that the Russian military industrial complex has advanced a lot was the area of drones. New Lancet, that it's called Product 53, and the new Geranium. What's the importance of this area for Russians?
Well, I think drone warfare has revolutionized modern war. I mean, I don't think NATO, the United States, and others have quite figured out just how much the war has changed. Ukraine knows, because Ukraine is on the receiving end, and Ukraine is using drones very effectively too. From top to bottom, drones are thoroughly integrated into every aspect of, you know, tactics, operations, strategy. The two drones you mentioned, the Geranium 2, you know, it's been upgraded with a jet engine, quieter. It uses composite material. It's painted black, which means that it can be employed at nighttime. And it's being employed very effectively. The Lancet Project 56 takes a very successful drone system, the Lancet, which, you know, has, since the beginning of the war, proven its worth. You know, but they've increased the range. It now can operate at night as well as day. But here's the big thing. It operates as a swarm of drones. The Lancet no longer is a single piece of munition fired, controlled, and brought in individually. It can now be fired dozens at a time, that in a fire-forget mode, where they're fired into a region. They coordinate with each other. They share intelligence. They distinguish their own targets, and then they all go in and hit separate targets, saturating a battle space with this the capability. These are game-changing technologies to fight the new Geranium 2, which doesn't cost that much to produce. Ukraine is going to have to activate air defense radars, which are going to be detected by the Russians. They're going to have to fire air defense systems, and, you know, one Patriot missile, or one Iris-T missile, or one, any modern system that the Ukrainians have, cost, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars per copy, whereas the Geranium-2 is tens of thousands of dollars. So right off the bat, Russia is bleeding the Ukrainians dry from a fiscal standpoint and from a capability standpoint, forcing them to use assets against a cheaper system, which if they don't shoot down, will hit the target it's going after with devastating results. So they have to shoot it down. In doing so, they expose these systems to newer systems coming in that can destroy these and go in through the gap created to hit strategic targets. It changes warfare, absolutely changes warfare. But where it gets really interesting is what's being done at the tactical level. These quadcopters that they're using are not only collecting tactical intelligence, but they're being used to devastating effect to drop grenades and more recently as what they call first-person kamikaze drones, FPV, first-person view, meaning that there's a camera on the front and the drone operator is guiding the drone into a bunker, onto a tank, onto artillery. And there are swarms of these drones operating throughout the theater, inflicting tremendous harm on the Ukrainians. They also use them to resupply. So as troops advance forward, they use drones to bring in ammunition resupply, to bring in food, to bring in medical supplies to forces that are otherwise would have been exposed, isolated, and subjected to being defeated. It's revolutionized war. As units maneuver, they now have drone units that maneuver with them to use these drones as fire support. So drones are being incorporated into the formal fire support planning of a Russian attack or a Ukrainian attack. They have to have anti-drone capabilities, these guns, these jammers that are being used. It's transformed the battlefield. And at this point in time, the Russian dominance is so absolute that the Ukrainians are paralyzed. They can't move lest they be detected and killed by drones. The Russians have so many drones now that they're using them against individual Ukrainian soldiers. It's a game-changing technology, and it's playing a big role in why Russia is winning this war, and it's I think exposing fatal weaknesses in the West because we aren't prepared to fight this kind of war yet.
The other area of tremendous impact is the electronic warfare. Is Russia winning in this battle between the West, between NATO and Russia?
Well, first of all, we have to recognize this is one of the more sensitive areas, very classified. The Russians don't like to talk about it too much. So you can't claim to have, absolute knowledge. What we know is a couple things. One, that the Ukrainians have acknowledged that the Russians are dominating the electronic warfare aspects of this conflict. They are preventing the Ukrainians from communicating effectively. That's a major thing, jamming. But they're also all the technology that we've given Ukraine, the HIMARS, the ATACMS, the JDAM satellite guided bombs, the Storm Shadow and Scalp missiles from Germany and in England, they're all being jammed very effectively by the Russians. The Ukrainians can't employ JDAM bombs anymore because the Russians just jam the signal and the bomb goes stupid. The majority of HIMARS are likewise jammed and made stupid by Russian electronic warfare. Even in the sphere of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, where NATO and the United States have been providing, very effective support to the Ukrainians. One of the reasons why the Ukrainians have achieved what they have on the battlefield is because of this intelligence support provided real time to Ukrainian units that can deliver artillery or deliver drones or deliver other supporting fires. But Russia, isn't sitting there just saying, okay, well, it is what it is. Strategically, I think there was a European satellite that was put up over Crimea. There's a lot of cloud cover in Crimea and indeed in eastern Ukraine, and conventional imaging satellites are not as effective because they can't see through clouds. Radar imaging can see through clouds, and the status of radar imaging today in terms of quality is such that it can discern items. I think that, you know, I'm not going to say what the number is, but there's a classified number of what the resolution is. And it's pretty good. And so radar imaging has, you know, certain effectiveness, and the United States is not prone to share its radar imaging technology with the West. I remember during the Gulf War, that product was not shareable with even our closest allies. So I imagine that a similar block on trading that or sharing that intelligence exists. So Europe created its own imaging satellite, radar imaging satellite. And yet when they took an image of Crimea, entire swaths of Crimea were blacked out. I couldn't see through it. Remember, this is radar. It's not clouds. Why couldn't they? Because Russia knew the frequency of the radar and had jammed that area that was sensitive. They didn't want the radar imagers to look into. They had jammed that frequency and made it impossible to read that strip. On the battlefield, Russia deploys forward because of the Ukrainian drones. Russia deploys forward and puts up a literal umbrella of electronic warfare defenses that jam radar imaging, jam the signals of the drones, basically to create this protective umbrella, sort of a digital Iron Dome, so to speak, over these units. Russia does this better than anybody else. It's all based upon the innovations that have occurred since this war started. Russia is dominating in the field of electronic warfare. And I think any American or NATO general would be shocked by how effective Russia is at this and how poorly NATO and American forces can operate in this environment.
How do you see the experience that the Russian army has gained during this battle? Do we have any other army right now, any other country that has such experience?
No, there is no army on the face of the earth that has this experience. The Ukrainian army, of course, has experience, but they're all dead. The people that are fighting today are people who get no training. They don't know how to use the equipment. So even though they're involved in the same battles, you can't compare the two. The Russians, their experiences, it cuts across the board. When they started, they were dealing with a primarily contract-based military of soldiers who had never seen combat. So a lot of mistakes were made early on. That's just natural. It is what it is. The Russians then mobilized 300,000 reservists. And here's the great victory of this, because the mobilization system was fundamentally broken in Russia. They were in for a rude shock when they sought to mobilize these guys. A lot of corruption they uncovered, a lot of inefficiencies, et cetera. Some regions performed well, others less well, some didn't perform at all. But Russia learned from this, fixed the problem. And today, in addition to having trained those 300,000, the same system today is absorbing hundreds of thousands of volunteers and training them to a high degree of capability. And all of this training incorporates lessons learned from the special military operation. And so the soldiers that are coming out of the training pipeline have a rough familiarity with what's expected of them in this new environment. It's not like they were trained in the old way, so they have to learn all the mistakes. They've been educated on the right tactics and operational procedures, etc. And there's hundreds of thousands of them who have real world combat experience. Remember, they're fighting against a Ukrainian army that is far more deadly than anything NATO has. Ukraine uses far more artillery than its NATO counterparts. Artillery is the number one killer on the battlefield. Russia knows how to survive in an artillery intensive environment. So if they ever are called upon to face NATO, Russia will, you know, understand what the potential threat is and how to deal with it. And NATO lacks the resources to survive in this. We don't have the ammunition. We don't have the tubes. We don't have enough. The Russian military today, a key aspect of any military is logistics, how to sustain itself. Russia today is sustaining hundreds of thousands of troops in a full-time combat posture logistically. with the ammunition they need, with the food they need, with the fuel they need. Russia's perfected this logistical sustainment. The West can't do anything remotely near this. I don't know how we think if we ever had to fight a war on this scope and scale, we'd be able to logistically support it. We haven't exercised it for some time now. We lack the resources to make this work. It works in peacetime because you can plan and exercise well in advance and pre-stage equipment. And everything's scripted. There ain't no script in war. It's happening. The enemy gets a vote. And if you don't have it, you don't have it. To get it to you when the enemy's interdicting you, you know, so the West can't sustain this kind of fight logistically, which is the end of their maneuver force. Because if you don't have fuel, if you don't have ammunition, it's over, it's done. So Russia is by far the most combat experienced military in terms of relevant experience related to large scale ground combat in Europe, in the world. And their troops are, you know, veterans. They have experience that's relevant. The leadership is very sound. You know, every military in peacetime, and sadly, this speaks to the American military as well, even the Marine Corps. You know, we promote, you know, peacetime warriors, guys who never, you know, look good in peacetime. They're good at putting Marines on parade. They're good at ensuring that Toys for Tots is, you know, adequately executed. They're good at, you know, doing any number of peacetime tasks, even those with combat experience. What was their combat experience? Iraq, Afghanistan. I mean, yeah, it was intense for the guys there, but it wasn't anything remotely related to what's going on in Europe today. So, you know, we have a lot of leaders in the American military that, if they were subjected to the kind of stresses and strain that large-scale ground combat presents, would fail. Russia had similar leaders. There's no Vladimir Putin has talked about. He said, "Yeah, we went to war with some guys both on the ground and in staff who were perfumed princesses. You know, people who were there for the wrong reasons. They weren't there to be warriors dedicated to waging war, and." The system had to weed them out. Russia's been purged of inefficiencies. The officers they have survived the crucible of combat. These are very well, it's like comparing the U.S. Army of 1945 with the U.S. Army of 1942. Rick Atkinson wrote a wonderful trilogy. You know, and you read An Army at Dawn, the first book about, you know, the U.S. Army going into North Africa. And you compare the absolute inefficiency of that, and then you read Day of Battle about the final, you know, the in-game stage of that conflict in Europe, and you look at how professional, how efficient, how murderously efficient the U.S. military had become, and that took 3 years to do. The Russian military has gone through this. Today, they are a murderously efficient military. They have perfected the art of not just killing, but survival. And you combine those two and you have something that is invincible when going up against a military that has no relevant combat experience. And all of NATO, including the United States, fits that definition.